Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the BBOL show featuring NJ Chat with Nikita and Jewel. I'm Nikita.
And I'm Jewel.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome, welcome. We do this every Saturday at 12 p.m. Eastern time, and we hope you enjoy it. We're going to talk about the Eyes of Wakanda, another fire joint from the MCU. So, we're going to talk about the history, the animation, and why the Eyes of Wakanda are important, in our opinion. So welcome, welcome. And as we start out, I'm going to talk about the intro, which when it first starts, literally you see the synopsis, or I guess the hint of all four EPs, episodes, playing out in the animated form. And I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Jewel to bring us in to the beginning of Eyes of Wakanda. Jewel?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Nikita. As Nikita said, we're bringing it into the Eyes of Wakanda. We have a four-episode anthology. And for those of you who love Blair's Word, we know that we have words of the day. And one of the words of the day was anthology. And anthology is a collection of selected literary pieces, often by various authors, unified by a theme, a genre, or time period. We have an anthology that's connected with all of those. We're going across time, we're going across multi-genres, and the theme is Wakanda and everything that has to do with the Eyes of Wakanda and who they're referred to. Again, Ryan Coogler knocks it out of the park. He is the executive producer. We have director John Fang and Todd Harris. We have John Fang. He helped direct four episodes, and Todd Harris was assisting director for three of those. We have written by Mark Bernardin and Jeffrey Thorne. And again, Wakanda was created by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. What an amazing piece and anthology. We start off with the understanding of who Wakanda is and where we are in the universe, and we go over the Dora Milaje. It is a beautiful representation of the spirit of Wakanda and the warriors that are within the Wakandan nation. For Eyes of Wakanda, I think one of the things that really hits home as you start off in the beginning is it's going to cover multiple themes. It's going to come across with multiple players, and two people stand out in the beginning, and that's a woman that's standing before the Dora Milaje. And the Dora Milaje is the warrior group of women that are sworn to protect the royal family and Wakanda in general. It is their army. And we have the Dora Milaje present a woman named Noni to one of the headmasters and directors of the Dora Milaje. And she explains that there's a problem. And there's a problem with one of the greatest warriors we've ever had. And this warrior is missing. And he was a guardian of the royal guard. And we need your help to bring them back. And Noni is pretty belligerent and says, first of all, why you need my help? And second of all, what does this have to do with me? And how come I've never heard of this person? And my bad, let me say, spoilers. If you've ever been a fan of Blurred's Word, if you've ever been a fan of what we're doing, we just need to let you know. We are going to analyze and tell you why you should be watching this show, what we liked about it, what is there to learn? What is there to deep dive into? So there's going to be spoilers. I should have said that earlier. So I'm so sorry. Noni then, again, explains, why am I here? You expelled me and I'm not part of the Dora Milaje. And how come I've never heard of this person that you want me to go after? And the woman clearly says, you did not know because Wakanda's greatest theory and belief is secrecy. You did not know because you were not supposed to know, and you did not need to know. Now we need you. And everyone we've ever sent out to go after this person, the lion, has failed. You are an exception because of the brief moment you did not serve as a Dora Milaje and you were expelled. He will not know who you are. And she says, you know, this isn't going to be easy. I'm not going to be able to go there. And he said, she says, if Okoye says, Okoye says, the leader says, if it was easy, I wouldn't have sent you. I need you to go find this person. He has taken a bunch of our artifacts, a bunch of our items, and he is using it to become, and Noni kind of answers her, a king. And that would put Wakanda, all of Wakanda, in jeopardy. For the love of country, for love of Wakanda, for the love of history and her people, she says, I will do it. I will go. And we start off with that amazing idea of secrecy is the most important. There is a rogue entity out there. They have a bunch of Wakandan items. And if you're aware of Wakanda, you know that it's vibranium, the entire mountain of Wakanda and entire bottom part of the earth is placed upon a giant bit of vibranium. And everything that has ever brought the Wakandans to the future has been based on that, the metallurgy, the creating of things, technological advancement, all centers around this. And it cannot leak. It cannot, the secret can, must be kept for their safety, for the people's safety, for the future of all of Wakandan people, and perhaps even the planet. And so they have always maintained an idea and a belief of isolationism. And we know this from Black Panther. We know this from the second Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. We know that we are not supposed to know about Wakanda until their hand is forced. So she goes out to set to find all the items this rogue military man, the lion, has taken and bring him back, regardless of what it takes. And that's how we start off. We start off with an opening scene after the introduction, which is gloriously brilliant. It is a storyboard. If you've ever seen cartoon-based storyboards where people are just throwing ideas, it is the most amazing exposition in front of every single episode. You see the storyboard play out. You see the fight scenes. You see artistry in a way that I haven't seen in a very long time. And I can't wait to hear Nikita talk about that because it was really brilliant and it took my breath away. And after that, we open to an island and people at the island of Crete. It takes place in 1260 BC in the late Bronze Age. We have the Minoan civilization, which is known as the first European civilization to have technological advancement. It is written historically in the year of our Lord 2025 right now. I hope you look it up. Crete, 1260 BC, late Bronze Age. And it's the Mecca of the beginning of civilization and technology. We have the Minoan, as I said, people. They're basically Greco-Greek based. And if you don't know where Crete is, we have a little slide there for you. We have Crete is an island between Greece and Turkey. We have to the north the Sea of Crete, which hugs the Aegean Sea, and it's all being braced and loved by the Mediterranean Sea. So that's where this takes place when it starts off. And we have a battalion of ships floating into the island of Crete. And sounds, alarms are sounding. People are getting ready. It looks like an invasion. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of ships in the water. And they all have the face of a lion. And for me, what this really screamed was how Julius Caesar and the Greco-Roman idea of how people took over and conquered the world back in the day. Right? They would show up, roll up with their big, massive army behind them. And what you then see is a group of warriors standing behind a man with a lion mask. The beauty of this is also in the picture poster that they have for the Eyes of Wakanda. It shows various different shards. It shows the various different episodes, but it shows also a depiction of various different people that are going to be in all these episodes. When the Lion Warrior shows up, he shows up with four generals or admirals, people behind him. To the far right, we have a Taino warrior. We know this because they have the red Anato seed markings across his face. He represents the indigenous people of the West, the people that have sailed from various different parts of North America, Central America, the Caribbean America, and South America. He is a native warrior. Then next to him, we have a Polynesian warrior. Think Maui in Moana. Very big, very thick. He's got a necklace of shark teeth. He's got the taro root skirt down below. He's got the rowing ship etched and attached to his skirt down at the bottom. He has the face of one of the gods across his belt. And he's just thick and big and broad. The Lion King is in the beginning in the front. Then next to him is a Valkyrie-looking, very white, pale, ghostly figure covered in the tattoos of the Vikings and the serpents. She has all the Viking Nordic god tattoos all over her, and her hair is white as snow. And next to her, the last warrior, is an Arabian Knight. Think 1001 Arabian Nights. Think of Sinbad, the sailor, and the thieves. Think of the Bedouin tribes and their curved sword, and the many, many tales that you know of those individuals as they're pirates and roaming around. This man is leading an army of all the strong people from across the world. And he has landed on Crete, the most civilized, in quotes, right? First European, technologically advanced area. And he's gonna take it over. And he doesn't just want to take it over. He is placed his warriors in all the areas from north, south, east, west of this island. And he has told the people there, you either come willingly and join our army, join our nation, join our empire, or you will suffer the consequences. Very Julius Caesar, very Roman, very Greco-Roman idea of, I'm going to decimate a small little town, leave no one alive except for one person. As that one person runs to the bigger city, rumors spread of the last place that was decimated, and in comes the empire and says, you have a choice. You could come willingly and join us, and we will benevolently let you join us. You will have all the riches you want. You will have protection, and you will grow, and you'll be part of this glorious empire, or you can end up like that last town. Now, Noni is in there covered. She's listening to everything, and she's like, I can't believe this man out here doing this. And we are seen going through a historical depiction of what we in our 2025 have understood has happened before in conquering the world. And we're experiencing it through the eyes of this ex-Dora Milaje, watching what happens before us. And let me tell you, I cannot express to you how beautiful the artwork has been so far. So I'm going to toss it over to Nikita. We're in the beginnings of the first episode. The first episode is called Into the Lion's Den, because we're going after the royal guard that has left Wakanda. He is now known as the Lion. Noni, the ex Dora Milaje, is going after him to retrieve everything he has taken and to bring him in, whether he wants to or not. And we are on the island of Crete. Nikita, how about that art? What did you think so far?
I was stunned. I'm a super visual person, and I play video games, and thank you for that, Jewel. Thank you for that intro. And I'm a super visual person, and I was just stunned. I was stunned by it. I went in and I said, wow, they put time into this, and I wanted to, knowing what I know about animation, video, and things like that, I was like, I need to see who these people are. And this animation is a unique artistic animation style that blends hand-drawn aesthetics with 3D design. We see a lot of CGI in art now. I mean, and it's been a minute since you've seen hand-drawn design. I just want to say the storyboard people, the animators, everyone was on their game, 2,000%. And with this design, it creates a moving painting effect. I don't know about you all, but when I was looking at that, I was like, yeah, that is literally just art, like paint, like watercolors on the screen come to life. And it was vibrant and it was brilliant and it was really beautiful. And I found out who the artists were. The series draws inspiration from contemporary Black artists like Ernie Barnes and Dean Cornwell. I mean, the style of design. And all over the interwebs and in articles I've read, that is the one thing everybody commented on because it was stunning and it was beautiful. You know, Disney has a history in animation, and a lot of people think that Disney was the first to do animation, but they weren't. Disney is known for its advancements in popularity in animation, but other people created or started animation. The Fleischer Studios, they created animated cartoons in the 1920s, and they even started using techniques called rotoscoping. If you ever saw when they were doing animation, you know, literally the turning of the video, and it's kind of amazing. It's the process of creating animated sequences by tracing over live action footage frame by frame. You might have seen that back in the day when they would show Mickey Mouse, right? So you have flip books, you have stop motion animation, all that stuff happened in the 19th and early 20th centuries. And again, like I said, Fleischer Studios, the Fleischer brothers, and I think I'm pronouncing their name right, I hope so, Max and Dave, were big competitors to Disney in the early days of animation. Disney has upped their game so many times, and they really outdid themselves here. Disney is innovative in the development of first feature-length animated films like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in 1937. And they also introduced a new technique for storytelling, character development, and production process. They also were the first to do Technicolor and synchronized sound. That was a big deal back in the day. I mean, a huge deal. They were able to take visual and auditory and put it together. Now, back in those days of television, jitter was kind of a problem. So they had to fix the frame rate and make it work so that the human eye wouldn't see that jitter. Snow White was a turning point. When people saw Snow White, the vivid apple, the smoothness of the animation, it was brought to life, much like picture stories when people first started getting talkies and how excited they were about that. But, I tell you, for me, I was fascinated by it. And so I said, you know what? Let me go and share, a little bit of information here about one of the, major Black players in Disney. And his name is Floyd Norman. He was the first African-American animator to work for Disney. And he did this in 1957 when racial tensions were at all-time high as the civil rights movement was happening. His hiring was 2 years after Rosa Parks was arrested in Montgomery. And he worked on iconic Disney films such as Sleeping Beauty, 101 Dalmatians. And I can tell you when 101 Dalmatians came out and you saw those dogs and their spots, it was so vivid. Everything was so vivid and so real. And coming from Black and white television and going into color, that was just amazing. I mean, absolutely amazing. He left Disney briefly to co-found Vignette Films, Inc., where he worked on 6 animated films that became some of the first films produced about Black history. He also worked on Sesame Street. And hey, 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 it's Fat Albert. Remember Fat Albert? Hey, 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 it's Fat Albert. I mean, my voice is a little deep, but you know what I'm saying? So in 1970, he returned to Disney where he worked on Robin Hood, Toy Story 2, Monsters, Inc. All that Pixar stuff, that's a money maker and a huge Pixar became a huge, huge studio influence in Disney also. Mulan, Dinosaur, and The Hunchback of Notre Dame. So there's a little history there. If you're interested in finding out more about animation, you can read The World History of Animation by Stephen Cavalier, or The Queens of Animation. And these are just recommendations. There are many books out there, by the way. The Untold Story of the Women Who Transformed the World of Disney and Made Cinematic History by Natalia Holt. So for me, the art really, really, like, it captured me. It captured me, made me sit up, and made me, you know, I pay attention anyway. I'm becoming a huge fan of the MCU and what they're putting out. And this was a win for them. Their marketing was slick because they had none. It was just August 1st, people were talking about it. And I think what this proves is if you make it, people will watch it, you know? And I thought it was just really brilliant. But to get back to the story that Jewel so effortlessly brought us into, I think one of the things that I also liked about this was they took the history of Wakanda and they took mythology, you know, Greek history, and combined everything. And it was kind of dope, along with some MCU, historical characters. Winnie Harlow played Noni. I was a little shocked by that. I was like, wow, she did a really good job. And as we know, Noni is a disgraced member of as Jewel said, the Dora Milaje. And when she gets captured and she fights back, I thought those fight scenes were brilliant. I thought it's so smooth. It was like a video game in cartoon, you know, and I play a lot of video games. And even as amazed as I am with the CGI in video games, this animation was so seamless and so almost real, but just beautiful. I can't say it enough. The vivid, vivid colors, even when you look at the gold and the bronze, because you know it's the end of the Bronze Age, right? I don't know if everyone picked it up. You saw all these metals. A lot of people thought, you know, that back in 1260 BC that everybody was like barbarians. They had technology, and they were using metals. The age after the Bronze Age is the Iron Age. But we're talking about the end of the Bronze Age right now. And the interesting part about what this gentleman, the lion, was doing was literally, you know, changing time, or, well, advancing time, I'll say it that way, because the significance of Crete is one of the biggest mythological stories is that's the birthplace of Zeus, all right? And remember that when we get to the next chapter, the next episode, and we all know who Zeus is. He's one of the most well-known and powerful gods in Greek mythology. When we look at the collapse of Crete, though, and we wonder why this is happening, reflect that what is happening in Crete is literally happening now. And whenever these things or these actions or these elements are all in place and occur, you will have a changing of time. You will have a changing of century. You will have the end of something and the beginning of something new. So with the upheaval across the Mediterranean and the Near East, Crete was already being impacted by all of that. So you see these ships coming in and you start seeing the dominance of all of these boat people coming in and taking over these places. Invasions, climate change, disruption of trade routes, and further destabilized political and economic situation in the region. It's interesting that the people of Wakanda, before archaeologists, and if you've been reading our posts on the app, you know them going to get their items, their history, what belongs to them, you know, is much what has been done in America and has been done many a time in colonized cultures, right? So I think it's just brilliant how that turned out. And I think it's brilliant how she was able to fight him and fight all of these people in order to preserve and save the artifact that was important for her people. Jewel, you have the mic.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I love that. And thank you for putting the art into perspective. For those of you that are following along on the slides, we have a little bit of the ability to see who Ernie Barnes is, and the individual books that Nikita mentioned will be up there, and we'll hopefully put that in the other areas and media that we produce out there. So go looking for those and peep those books, check them out. Nikita made it so readily available for you to just deep dive into the history of animation. And that is such an amazing thing. It is an art form that often isn't given the respect owed, but in this moment, in this time, it really is a wonderful opportunity to see what we as Black folks have done over the years, and know that we were always there during these amazing moments in the transition of animation. So thank you, Nikita, for that. And again, the books will be up there for you to check later. When we're talking about these moments in time that Nikita mentioned, I thank you for that. What a wonderful segue, because if you're following along in Marvel, in both their animated movies that are in the MCU, as well as in their live action, they refer to something called an hinge point. Keep note of that particular phrase, because you'll find that later as well in Eyes of Wakanda. But Nikita says, in these moments in time, something is happening in the world. Things are being moved. Things are being changed. Those hinge points decide where the world is going from then on. If we're talking about colonization and you look up historically, when people were here in the West, living their lives and existing in indigeneity, and indigeneity is just a fancy word of saying first peoples, people that were here before what? Before other people showed up, before other people came knocking on the door and saying, inside, is anybody there? You know, before people knew that, oh, wow, there's a town here and there's a group of individuals just living their lives. I did not know that. So that's what indigenous means. It means from that area, from that region, locally, in various different cultures. It could be Creole, Criollo, all those different words mean the same thing. So when you say Creole, you mean from there, in that area, from that place. Indigenous is the same, okay? You from there. Originally, like, you didn't get picked up, moved over, you didn't, you know, that's it. So it's nothing fancy. It's just words got meaning, and we love words, word, because hey, word. Okay. In these hinge points, and Noni is looking for these artifacts, it is so beautiful. Again, pay attention to the people that are in episode one, Into the Lion's Den. You have an Arabian Knight. You have this Saudi Arabian, Arabic-looking Bedouin person. And it brought me back to 1001 Arabian Nights. And if we talk about the Bronze Age, as Nikita said, we're at the end. We're at the end of the Bronze Age. Within the anthology of 1001 Arabian Nights, which is also an anthology. So brilliant. Thank you, Ryan Coogler. That was great. We have a story called The Lost City of Brass. Brass and bronze both have copper. They just mix with something else. Again, we're talking metallurgy. Remember, everyone is focusing on this metal called vibranium. I thought that was brilliant. So The City of Brass is a story within the anthology of 1001 Arabian Nights, where a group of archaeologists go around finding lost treasures that belong to them to bring them back. Does that sound familiar? Because if you saw The Eyes of Wakanda, that's exactly what Noni is doing. But think about it again. If you play video games, have you ever heard of Lara Croft? If you've ever watched movies, have you ever heard of Indiana Jones? Have you ever heard of us? And I mean us, meaning all the people of the world that happen to not be European, Anglo-Saxon, Caucasian. Have you ever heard of us saying, you went through all of our artifacts, dug them up, took it, and now we want them back? Can we have them brought back to us? We want to preserve our history and our past. So that's basically what Noni is doing with the little twist, because what she's trying to do is make sure nobody knows about Wakanda. Okay, Wakanda is supposed to be the stereotypical African nation that is nothing more, if we go back to Wakanda of before, when Black Panther came out first, the idea is they're just huts and spears. People did not know that they were the most technologically advanced society ever. But now back in time, we have this metal that is so precious that it cannot be released to the populace, the general populace. And she's going to go and make sure that everything this man has taken, and his name is Nkati, N-K-A-T-I. And he was part of the Hatut Zarazi rogue agents, the ones that were sent out into the world to see what the world is doing and see if they were ever posed as a threat to Wakanda. And in doing so, he took a bunch of artifacts to create himself a kingdom that would rule the world with these artifacts. Again, she's going out to go get them. We find that out into the lion's den. And she starts a group and joins the War Dogs. And the War Dogs literally have a meaning. They are there to protect the people of today, ensuring that the people of tomorrow of Wakanda are protected, because secrecy of Wakanda and what Wakanda is must be preserved. So like Nikita said, this hinge point with the falling of Crete, because the lion has showed up, Noni has tried to save as much as she could. She returns back to Wakanda. Akaya says, you have done well. And she says, no, I actually failed. There are so many other things that were lost. So many artifacts are still out there. She said, well, okay, take your rightful place back into the Dora Milaje. And she goes, no, I don't think that's for me. I don't think I follow those rules. That isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. And Akaya said, I'm so happy you said that. Welcome to the War Dogs. You will have a different mission. So we are in a story made by us, for us, with the help of these fantastical characters of Wakanda to go out and retrieve what is sacred to Wakanda and its future. And it all centers around the idea of this technology must not leave Wakanda. It must stay here. And we get into the second episode, Legends and Lies. Thank you, Nikita, for bringing up where Zeus comes from. Thank you for bringing up the idea of mythology and what that means, because that segue was a perfect segue into the next episode. The next episode is quite literally about the Trojan War. The Trojan War and who stars in it, what it's all about. And of all people that show up, we have Memnon. Memnon, the Ethiopian black king that actually runs the armies of Myrmidons. And he's fighting alongside such that the Trojan War can be accomplished and won. I want to emphasize the fact that what is not often said is that Memnon is a demigod. Demigods are not immortal. Demigods are the children of gods. He is the son of Eos, the goddess of the dawn, beloved by Zeus. That is very, very, very important. And within this story, we have Achilles, another demigod. He is the son of a Nereid, which is a water nymph, and he is in this friendly relationship with Memnon. But if you guys have read mythology the way I've read mythology, this threw me for a loop, because I was like, hold up, that's not the way I remember it. And then I started thinking, whoa, what if that saying of history is written by the victors holds true for this anthology that we're going through? Remember, the entire point and theme, we have so many themes running through this, and I love it. One of the themes running through is that nobody should know about Wakanda's abilities. Nobody should have the vibranium. No one should have their technology, and no one should know that Wakandans exist at the capacity that they exist in. They should just be black folks living in Africa, just living along with their life. They should not have all the things that they have. That's a secret. And they hold secrecy as one of their core values. They're isolationists. So in this story of mythology, we have a black man of Ethiopian descent, a king, who is fighting alongside Achilles as his friend in this version. And they are going to go in and end the war. And they're going to produce the Trojan horse. Okay. Which, again, I want to throw back to the first episode. In 1001 Arabian Nights, there was also a story within that anthology called the Ebony Horse. And it is a giant mechanical horse, black horse. Okay, I'm just saying, these ties are just insane. I just love it. Okay. So the Trojan War happens, and Memnon is a part of it. Then you have these two demigods fighting alongside each other, and they're friends, I think a little more than that. And there is a betrayal. There is not a betrayal because one doesn't respect the other. There is a betrayal because they're fighting for the same thing. The theme is upholding home, holding on to legacy, protecting home, protecting the future, protecting family. And we see something that the rest of the world has never read before. We know that Achilles survives the Trojan War. We know that if you followed the Iliad, the Odyssey, and the Aeneid, if you had read these books, and please, 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 Homer's Iliad, Odyssey, and Aeneid, if you have not taken the time to enjoy these stories, please, please, please take the time to enjoy them, because contrary to popular belief, y'all, black folks were there all the way through. If y'all even knew who Medusa was and the Gorgons, I mean, we have been there, we have been there, we have been there. And it is constantly told up to us and in stories. And even when you see the movies, it is nothing but white bodies and white people. And it is a European beginnings, right? But in this moment with this anthology, we get to see the truth, okay? Memnon was a black man, dark, beautiful black man from Ethiopia. And we have always been across the area. We have always been parts and cogs in the wheels of history. And in this anthology, the reason why people in 2025 have not heard of our place in history in those different areas is because Wakanda treasures secrecy. You are not supposed to know how strong we are. You're not supposed to know how technologically advanced we are. You're not supposed to know that we were in all these hinge points assisting with history of the human race and allowing for it to develop such that Wakanda isn't found out to be who Wakanda is. I thought this was such a beautiful homage to the myths and mythology. I thought having Odysseus there and Helen of Troy and Paris and Memnon and Achilles, all these different moments that I remember growing up and reading these myths made me feel like, wow, and now we have another iteration, another moment, another story, another art form of being able to see how we can interpret these myths and move forward into a new generation, a new moment in time. And it was just brilliant to me. I want to shoot it over to Nikita because I know out of all the people I've ever met, her and I, we just love mythology so much. And she is such a big, 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 big fan. We are in episode 2. We are in Legends and Lies. It's directed by John Fang, written by Mark Bernard. And it is Eyes of Wakanda, second episode. What did you think of this episode, Nikita?
I thought it was brilliant. I thought that what you said about it was excellent. I will say this. you're correct. I mean, we both like mythology, and I loved how you explained the difference in between. And I think this is what fascinates me about this series and how brilliant I think Mr. Coogler and his team were. What they did was combine the history of Wakanda, right, with the history in mythology of very, very critical times. The legend of the Trojan War is pretty big historically. And everybody knows about the Trojan War, but they don't know why. They don't know the significance of Achilles in the Trojan War. And certainly they don't know the significance of Memnon, right? To understand the story of Achilles, you have to read the Iliad by Homer. And thank you, Jewel, for having the Iliad, the Odyssey, and the Aeneid up there, because I'm a huge fan of Homer. If you go to Blurge Word website, you'll see the Odyssey is one of the books I picked. I've actually read them all, and I'm a big, huge fan. The Iliad is an epic poem attributed to Homer and tells the story of the final weeks of the Trojan War. As you see in this episode, when they take the horse there and they have everyone inside, I love how they did it. I thought it was brilliant. I don't think as clear in the story of why Achilles was so angry. And Achilles is angry because someone they care about died, right? I like how they put a twist to the story, right? As Jewel said, because in the real story, when you focus on the rage of Achilles and his consequences of his actions, the war itself began after Paris of Troy abducted Helen. If you remember, when Memnon goes in there and sees Paris and her stealing the gold, and that's Helen, right? The wife of the Greek king Menelaus, sparking a decade-long conflict. The Iliad doesn't cover the whole war, but rather a specific period within it. And this is where you see Achilles withdraw from the battle due to a dispute with the Greek commander Agamemnon. So when we talk about it, and we say, that doesn't quite jump. But it does if you follow what Jewel said. They have to keep the secret. So the victor will tell the story the way they want to tell it, with them being, you know, the best, right? So did Memnon die? We don't know. But we know, I mean, did Memnon live, as this story shows? We don't know. But we do know that the retelling of it in the Odyssey and the Iliad is that Memnon died. Memnon is really Bakai, who is a war dog, and he has been there for a decade working with Achilles, you know, fighting side by side with him. He's actually a king of Ethiopia. And as Jewel gave his bona fides, I mean, he's a fighter. He's a true, true fighter. But his mission to get the artifact is number one. His people is number one, and keeping Wakanda hidden is number one. I thought it was a beautiful retelling, of a remixing, so to speak, of the story of Helen of Troy and Achilles and Memnon, making Memnon front and center and, a very important player. Although he's important in the Iliad and important in the Odyssey and important in the Aeneid, he in this, which should make you want to go and research and find out why it matters. Is this where Achilles' heel comes from? Yes, because that was his weakness, right? If you read about Achilles in mythology, you'll know that that is his weakness. I mean, I love everything about it. I love how the story was told, and I loved how they keep the secret. Now, I'm wondering, when we get to episode 4, I'm going to have to say that a rule was broken. It's a rule that I believe in time travel, and that's all I'm going to say. But this is where we are. Jewel, you have the mic.
Thank you. I can't wait to hear that. I want to say, because Nikita brought up animation and origin stories, at the very, very, very end, as Bakai is speaking to Noni, because she's still alive and she's older now, her hair has long been grayed. She's wearing an eye patch because of her fight with Nakati, the lion. And she's talking to Bakai, and he's lost, and he's sad because he didn't want to kill his friend Achilles, and it didn't have to be that way. And he feels so out of place. As he's telling the story of what happened, and remember, we know this whole mythological story differently. Amnon dies by Achilles' hands in our mythology. But we also know that Helen and the battle at Athens starts with a golden apple. And a leaf falls off of the tree where he's sitting, and it lands in water, and it ripples. And the leaf, just for some reason, makes me think, because it's a golden leaf, of the golden apple. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what? 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 And I was shocked, because if you have read mythology, if you have been a fan of mythology, and if you are a fan and a lover of animation, and thank you so much, Nikita. Always, it's always such a blessing and a wonderful thing to do these with you, because I get to geek out and nerd out, particularly with your expertise and everything that you discuss. You just don't realize all the things you realize, because you just think that they're things that you like, and they're like little hobbies or little whatever. But those little details and nuances and things you geek out upon, other people really know about them, and they deep dive too, and they can just enlighten you in ways that you never knew. And put them all together, you have a better view of the tapestry of how everything is placed together. So thank you for that, and thank you for discussing the animation and the mythology and the differences of the story. When Bakai sits down and he's sad because his friend is no longer there and he feels out of place, like I said, one little leaf falls from the tree, lands in the water, and it, strangely, ironically, if you haven't read the stories, it kind of looks like a golden apple, and I thought that was brilliant. Again, that was episode 2 of Eyes of Wakanda. We have gone through Into the Lion's Den, episode 1. Episode 2 was Legends and Lies, episode 2. And episode 3, we enter now Lost and Found. Episode 3 is Lost and Found, directed jointly by John Fang and Todd Harris, written by Mark Bernardin. Lost and Found, we end up in China, 1400 AD. And we are introduced to War Dog 99, Basha. In this moment, we have the hills of the Chinese mountains, and it is covered in snow, and we have the introduction of Kunlun. Kunlun literally means divinity in Chinese mythology. Now, we've already told you, episode 1 talks about Wakanda mythology. The people that play in the first episode, we have indigenous Western Taino and other indigenous people. We have Polynesian warriors. We have Bedouin Arabian warriors. We have a Nordic Viking-like warriors. We have now the Trojan, the Athenians, and the Greek warriors for the Trojan War. And now we're in Chinese mythology in Kunlun. And Kunlun means divinity in Chinese mythology. It is based on various sources. And I really wanted to read this out loud because I think it was so brilliant that Ryan Coogler decided to add this as part of his addition to the entire world being part of the tapestry of art. And if you follow along with what he's done so far in almost all of his works, think of Black Panther, think of Wakanda Forever, Black Panther, think of Sinners, and also Ironheart. But now with Eyes of Wakanda, it is not exclusionary. It is inclusionary. And it's not that it's just Black. It is proudly, unapologetically Black, but it does not exclude the rest of the world, because we live in a world where all of us exist. So as you saw, if I may go tangentially, in Sinners, it's a town with Black folks. And of course, in a town with Black folks, in the South, you're going to have white folks. And then back then, we had Chinese folks too. And we had indigenous people running around the area too. So here we are in Eyes of Wakanda, And we've already been to the Mediterranean, the Fertile Crescent. We've seen people from all over the world now. Now in episode 3, Lost and Found, we are in China. China. And the war dogs are in China. And he introduces Kunlun. And Kunlun Shan is a mountain or mountain range in Chinese mythology. And it literally is the Axis Mundi, or where all of the world meets into its divinity. And I wanted to read this because I don't know what Mr. Kugler is doing, but the inspiration really is brilliant. The term Kunlun has also been applied to Southeastern Asian lands or islands, and seemingly even Africa. Even Africa. It means distant, mysterious, exotic, but godly, divine. It's about geographical, mythological places, and it includes the Kunlun Mountains, Tibetan Plateau, and Mount Kailash. I thought that was brilliant because we are also introduced to Iron Fist. And if you follow the MCU or you're a fan of the comic books, you know that in Kunlun, we have another realm, and you fight one of the dragons in the realm of dragons. And with winning, you are then given the divinity powers of Iron Fist. So long as you are worthy and you win. So what do war dogs do? We already know that they're supposed to. Their main objective is to preserve their safety and the secrecy of Wakanda. And in doing so, they go throughout the world searching for the artifacts and the things that would trace back to Wakanda and their technological advances and bringing them back, housing them safely and keeping them away from the rest of the world. So we're in China and we're in 1400 AD and this gentleman is in a temple-like place and there's a dragon with a tongue and the tongue is the metal, the vibranium. He's incapable of removing the tongue, which is the only piece that needs to be removed. And so what does he do? Well, of course, anyone would be like, well, I can't remove this piece. Let me just take it all. That wasn't very wise. I don't think I would remove the most important part of a temple personally. But I mean, like Nikita said, you got an objective and the mission is the mission. And the mission is to bring the stuff back. And it's the tongue, so I can't take it out. I guess I take the whole thing you pray to. No, 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 no. No, that's not the right answer, sir. And we find out as a bunch of funny little things ensue, and we get back to Wakanda. Wakanda is so vastly more advanced than it was when we saw Noni being brought to Akeya. And the Dora with the Dora Milaje. It is so far along now. Remember, that was Crete back in 1200. Now we're at 1400 AD. And we have flying machines, airplanes. There are no airplanes on the planet. People, I need y'all to pay attention. Wakandans have airplanes. And in China, they don't have no airplanes. I want you to know there are no airplanes, okay? So we're talking exponential leaps and bounds, leaps and bounds. If I would say my grandparents were born in the 1920s and airplanes were relatively new for them to be able to just constantly be boarding and going back and forth, yeah, we're talking the 1200 when we see Noni to 1400 and the Wakandans have got airplanes. And not just any kind of airplane, not open airplanes that we used to see back in the, you know, the Wright brothers. No, this is a closed aerial ship with aerodynamics that would surpass any ship we got now in the sky. Okay. We have computers. We have shielding. This is advanced. Okay. And he asks for clearance to enter Wakanda. He gets joked a little bit like, oh, bro, you still alive? We thought you were done for. You've been gone a hot minute. And he says, oh, well, she was a blizzard and so sorry. But I got what I was looking for. Am I cleared to enter? And they're like, yeah, bruh, come on in. And he enters Wakanda. It is very evident that this gentleman is the jokester of the group, because every time people talk about him, there's an eyebrow being lifted, there's a smirk or a question, and the general that oversees his retrieval, his artifact retrieval mission, is like, did anything happen? He said, nah, man, why would you think anything happened? He said, because I told you, we didn't hear you. Nah, it's easy peasy. Everything's great. Everything is wonderful. And in the back end, we see that the engineer, she's looking around at the ship and something ain't working. And she gets yanked into the ship. And we're like, uh-oh, something's not right. And mission control calls him and says, bruh, the specs on your ship and the diagnostics report on whether everything is okie dokie, smoky, it hasn't come in yet. And he goes, what? That's weird. You mean my ship? Like mine? And everybody's face is like, yeah, brother, yours. Like, who else's ship are we talking about? It's what? And it's very evident this happens often. And he says, oh, oops. And he hangs up and he runs to see what's going on. And we are met with the face of a brand new character in yellow attacking the guy who runs his mission, the artifact retrieval, Ebo, General Ebo. And she does not speak English to that we know of. She is speaking in Mandarin to a Chinese dialect, in Mandarin to Ebo. And she's like, Basha, which is the only word he understands. And he says, Basha? She's like, yeah, Basha. I'm about to Basha his Basha. And he's like, oh my goodness. And finds a way to lock her in with a bunch of warriors. And she's like, oh, patootie, I'm going to have to fight my way through this. So while she's locked in fighting with a bunch of warriors, he finds Basha. And he's like, what the hoity-toity is happening here? And he's like, what do you mean? Ain't nothing wrong. And he's like, yeah, lots of things are wrong. Lots of things. And eventually, Basha finds her. And she is covered in the yellow helmet, which is made out of cloth at the moment, of the original Iron Fist headband that goes over the face. And she is, from what we see, the original Iron Fist, which makes sense because she's Chinese and it's a Chinese lore, not like L-O-R-D, lore-based mythology. And she explains who she is and that she fought the dragon, gained the powers that were given to her out of nobility and honor because she rightfully won them. And she is going to preserve her culture. Give me back what you stole. And he's like, I can't do that because y'all stole from us. And she's like, no, we don't ever steal from anybody, which is a big giant misunderstanding. And a fight ensues, and eventually they find out that all he had to do, y'all, was ask nicely and trust her. But what is the resounding theme? We have three episodes. We're in the third episode, Lost and Found. The biggest theme is secrecy is the most important. But he learns a very humbling, very valuable lesson. Because initially, we have flashbacks, and we didn't know this. Initially in the story, before we even knew this was happening, he was injured upon landing and she found his body. And unlike what usually happens, which is probably stay away from the stranger, let him freeze in the Himalayan mountains, you know, this ain't got nothing to do with me. She takes him into her home and brings him, nurses him back to help. And in this time of understanding that another human being needed her help, he never once trusted her. That makes sense. I'm not knocking the brother, right? To say, look, I'm from this place. I'm from this place and I need my things and I need to go back because this is my mission. And it is in this moment that we realize maybe the isolationism is not so great, because her coming into Wakanda through his ship and invading Wakanda space, well, now they done blew up their spot. Here's this powerful entity that knows Wakanda exists, Wakanda got powers, Wakanda be taking artifacts from other people, Wakanda got soldiers, they got flying ships. Like, she knows all this stuff, because all he had to do was say, yo, that dragon that you guys pray to, yeah, the tongue, that's ours, and we kind of want it back, because we kind of pray to that too. Like, you could have said anything. But he realizes that he should have trusted her after she gave the most human approach to finding someone in need, and he did not. And his general's like, man, see how you always be messing everything up? And I'm going to move it over to Nikita, because this was one of the funniest ones. I think out of all four, this one had me laughing the most, and it had me really enjoying cartoons for cartoon's sake. Nikita, what did you think?
Thank you. Thank you for that synopsis. You're absolutely right. This was a good one, because I didn't know the original, like, everything about Iron Fist. So introducing Iron Fist as the interloper, right? And she tells her story. But I like how Basha is this chaos agent. And, you know, he ends up giving Ebo the credit. And and the councilman buys into it. So they're able to protect themselves from the mess that they made. I was getting very distraught about them breaking all those artifacts, by the way. I'm just going to say that when they were fighting in there, I'm like, y'all really just messing. It's very violent, aggressive, messing, breaking stuff. Okay. That's what I was thinking about. So I was like, but I thought it was really cool the way that they were able to work together, team up, and, you know, get the situation where, one, Ebo ends up getting a raise, you know, gets promoted, which is good, because, you know, I think he kind of wanted to be out in the field more, because he's one of those people that try so hard to be such a good leader and nobody really respects him, but he was able to, you know, Basha made him look good. And then the councilman says, go ahead and, you know, get it squared away, because we all know that Basha is a chaos agent and he likes to mess around with the ladies apparently a lot. So, because she saves him, he ends up, well, you know. So, I thought it was a good one. I thought this one was more lighthearted. And I also thought this one really, really brought in two teams working together to, you know, protect each other's future, by the way, and protect each other's legend, by the way. And I did like that airplane, the flying machine. It looks like a stealth. I was like, their technology is so solid. It even... they did so well with the art that it reminded you of the actual, and this is a prequel, by the way, when you saw it on Wakanda, the underground rails, the transportation system, they did so good that you immediately recognize that. And you're thinking to yourself, this is 1400 AD. Remember the system that you saw in the actual movie of Wakanda. That's how good their technology is. And the vibranium is so important to it, and the strength of that and protecting that. And I had a conversation with Jewel when we were discussing why they're always trying to take these important artifacts and things from these countries. And this is a prime example. And the vibranium, much like the steel and copper of the day, everything that we have in this country has been taken from someone else. Everything. And, you know, I just thought that this movie, really, this animated feature really brought all of that into perspective. But I want to talk about each of these time periods, the 14, and thank you, Jewel. That was brilliant, brilliant, great synopsis, tied it up very neatly before we get into this fourth part. But I want to close this one out with the year 1400 AD. Remember I said every single one of these episodes mark a beginning and an end of something. 1400 AD marks the end of the 14th century, and that is a period characterized by global shifts and transitions. It's a point where the late Middle Ages were giving way to the Renaissance. You know, we know the Renaissance period was the most beautiful and artistic period in history. Beautiful period in history. And it was the age of exploration, with notable developments in Europe, the Mongol Empire, and other parts of the world. Asia was getting looked at very strongly during this time. So this made sense to start this in 1400 AD where they did. All right. It marks a transition period from the medieval world to a new era characterized by intellectual, geographic, and political transformation. It was a time of both crisis and progress, laying foundation for the modern world, the beginning of something and the end of something. The end of the medieval period and the beginning of the Renaissance and the Age of Exploration. I thought that was just brilliant. This is not just a cartoon. This is not just an animation. This is a retelling of a foretelling of the future of Wakanda. This is a way of saying exactly what Jewel said. We've always been here. And tying in these major, major transitions in history and putting it together and saying, without this, there would not have been that. And each of these points, I thought it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And clap, clap, clap all the way around. Jewel, you have mine.
Thank you so much. Thank you for putting the historical context on that, Nikita. It was, it's so enlightening. I love to hear your perspective of the hinge points and the beginnings of something and then bringing in the ends of something. What a beautiful theme. And you're absolutely right. The idea that while we as humans, again, in 2025, going through historical moments in our brain while we're enjoying this artwork and this animation, Nikita's absolutely right. It's not just a cartoon, y'all. It's not just an animated feature. It's not just, you know, somebody trying to put Wakanda up there so people could like it. This is something bigger than that. This is an homage to history. It is a hat tip and a thank you to those who came before us who may not have been seen. Thank you to Nikita for bringing up Ernie Barnes. Thank you so much for the moments that we may not have known, we did not know of, but we experienced together. We just didn't know who was in the back end, who was there for us to be able to enjoy and not even know who their names were. And I think that's another aspect of what Eyes of Wakanda are. We have always been here. We have always been part of history. And although to the victor goes the spoils and history is written by the victors, sure, that may be the case in a lot of things. But here we all swimming around the same goop right now. And we're all on this planet together. And we are in a moment in time where never before in the history of all humanity have we had the ability as a collective species, all the humans in Asia, in Africa, in Europe, in the Western world, in all of the Americas, because it's all called America, guys. There's North America, South America, Central America, and Caribbean America. It's all America. Thank you, Amerigo Vespucci. If you're here for the first time ever, human beings that have information in the West, that same amount of information the East got. The same of information that the Northern people got. Well, Southern people got it too. For the first time in history, we all can come in and read and research and be privy to the same things. The knowledge that we have in our hands, we all can learn it. What a time to be alive, to have this knowledge and be able to share it practically freely. Now, I'm not saying education is free, but we are in a technological age where the books we read here can be read across the way on another part of the world. And why do I say that? I say that because, yes, when we see the beginning of this anthology, we have the first, in quotes, civilization of Europe in Crete. But we were there during that time. Do you guys ever read those stories? Have you heard of those stories? Did you know about those stories? Everybody knows about Achilles. How many of us lack the knowledge of Memnon? Everybody, you know, we see that on the internet right now, the argument of the black samurai. He existed, y'all. That was real. Let's Like that, they really were there. We were on the Silk Road. We were there as Moors. We were there in all these moments in time, and to be able to see it in an artwork and twist it and say, what if the stories we've read and we've known and we've absorbed all this time were written by the people in power now, or dusted slightly to change it a little bit? What if I told the story differently? Would you be able to picture it then? Is that something you would be able to see yourself in? Can you see a reflection of yourself in here? In these moments in time, did you ever consider that we were also there across the world? And it was a really beautiful homage. And I say all of that. Thank you, Nikita. Thank you. Because these hinge points roll all the way back into The Last Panther. The Last Panther takes place in Ethiopia in 1896, which is a leap year. The Last Panther, Season 1, Episode 4, The Last Panther takes place in Ethiopia in 1896 AD. Directed by Todd Harris and written by Jeffrey Thorne. And here we have the story of Prince Tafari, T-A-F-A-R-I. Prince Tafari is on a war dog mission with Coda, and he is the war dog, and they have to go after an artifact, one particular artifact, a small, regular-looking, everyday axe. The metal of the axe is vibranium. And we happen to land in a moment in time where we are in the middle of the Italians trying to invade and win a war with the Ethiopians. It's the Battle of Adwa. And I just want for you guys to understand that in this moment in time, in 1896, in real world human life, where Nikita exists and Jewel exists in 2025 historically, there really was a Battle of Adwa in 1896. It really was the Italians trying to invade Ethiopia. It really did happen. And they did not, Italians did not win. In that moment, it made it the only and first known moment where all of Africa had been conquered and colonized except for Ethiopia. I'm going to say that again. In 1896, it was the only country in Africa in the 19th century that had not been taken over and colonized. Okay? I want that to sit in for just a little bit. Just a little bit. The battle in real life started on March 1st, 1896. And it ended on March 9th, y'all. The Italians came in with their muskets and their pristine outfits, and they was going to attack this African nation, and they were going to take over. It started on the 1st of March and ended on the 9th of March. And the Ethiopians said, They just sang that song, all right? On March 9th, Francisco Crispi resigned, defeated, that he was unable to conquer Ethiopia. Now, in the Black Panther, we have, in this modernized car in 1896, war dog Kuda and prince of the royal family, Tafari, are out here in the middle of this Ethiopian-Italian war looking for an artifact. Bombs are going off. Italians are cussing and shooting at people. The Ethiopians like, I don't think so. You ain't gonna win here. And everything's flying. Buildings are blowing up. People are just dodging and ducking and diving. And Kuda's like, this is gonna be easy. We're gonna go in. We're gonna come out. But you need to be careful. You need to follow these lessons. Why are you even here? And he's like, well, I'm on a mission. I'm not even the second son. I gotta find my way and my place in life. And why are we even doing this? I mean, is it even something important? He's like, it's always important because we must maintain the secrecy of Wakanda. And this is an artifact that should not be out here. Bombs are going off. And Kuda's looking at where this artifact is supposed to be. And he's telling him, he's giving a good lesson to Prince Tafari. You don't want to be seen. You don't want to make noise. You don't want to ruffle any feathers. He's just going through a list of stuff. And he turns around and the brother ain't even there, man. He ain't even listening to what this man is trying to teach him. And he's like, oh my gosh, I just done killed the prince of the Black Panther. I don't know what's going to happen. He's worried. He's sweating. And the prince shows up with the artifact. He's like, what? You went through all the bombs and all the things happening and you went and you got it? He goes, yeah, I mean, because that's what we were supposed to do, right? We're going to be written in the history books of the most amazing. He's like, that's not why we do it. We don't do this for the recognition. We don't do it for the fame. We don't do it for the acclaim. We quite literally do it as, and I wrote it down because it was so poignant and it is the theme, the war dogs. Their mission is all about protecting the people of Wakanda today to ensure the future of the people tomorrow. War Dog's mission is all about protecting the people of Wakanda today to ensure the future of the people of tomorrow. And we do that by ensuring that none of our history and our artifacts are found in public. So they're in the car. They got the artifact. Everything's great. And he's looking at this, the princess, Tafari. And he's like, this ain't even, I mean, even the handle of this axe isn't even that spectacular. It looks grimy. It's old. And again, Kudo's dropping some knowledge and some wisdom and saying, it's not about what it looks like. The metal and the part of the axe, the blade, is vibranium. Don't you see they're already tearing each other apart? Can't you see there's already bloodshed? Remember, y'all, I said 1896 is a real war. It was the Battle of Adwa. It's a real thing. And he said, these people are already trying to just get rid of each other. They do not need us and our technologically advanced items to push them further into the bloodshed. The prince is like, yeah, whatever. I don't know. They better be writing songs and stuff about us because we did that. And Kuda's like, oh my gosh, this kid, he's not really paying attention. And all of a sudden, something materializes in front of them. They swerve, they crash, as often is the case in these kind of shows. And they have to get out of the crash and they're like, what is that? And we have a armored individual ripping apart the vehicle, trying to get something. Kuda, the war dog, is very calm. And he's like, we don't know who you are, but whomever you are, we ain't got no beef with you. Okay? We just need to be a go about our business. So how about you go to the left, we go to the right, we swerve and miss each other, and you know, don't start none, won't be none. And the armored individual is like, I'm not looking for you. I'm not studying you. I've got a mission myself. And gotta love it. Gotta love it. And so they're ripping apart and fighting at the same time. The vehicle, because obviously this armored individual is looking for something. And Kuda's like, you're not going to get the artifact. I don't know what you're looking for. But this ain't right. I don't know what you're doing, but we're going to stop you. And of course, he wins. And he's got the individual in a chokehold. And she starts speaking Wakandan, the dialect. Please, please stop. You do not know what you're doing. And he's like, no way you know our language. Who is you? And the Prince Serapi's like, who is you? Like everybody's, who is everybody? Who is everybody? Everybody's lost. I don't know what's going on. Everybody's lost. She says, yes, I am from Wakanda. This is very important. And I am on a mission. And she explains she's from the future. and there's no more time to waste. The item that they went to go retrieve needs to be put back. You have to put it back. And they're like, I don't believe you. She says, I'm from the future. I am actually the Black Panther. I am Queen of Wakanda. I am here in the past because a giant horde of invading species will come into the realm, and because of our isolationism as Wakandans, the world will fight against this invading species and they will lose. They will lose, and when it's our turn, when everybody else is left dead and not there, Wakanda will be left alone to save humanity, the human species, and all of Wakanda, and we will lose. And for me, that was very much like the Jewish poem, the poem of the past when Nazis were coming. You know, first you came for the communists, and you came for the teachers. Although I'm so sorry, I'm not getting the words right, but first you came for this group of people and I did nothing. And then you came for this group of people and I did nothing. And then when you came for me and I needed help, I looked around and there was no one left. That was the lesson I took from this, that Wakandans were so technologically advanced that when the world was being eaten and devoured quite literally by a horde of individuals, by the horde of species, they did not help. They did not intercede. They could have if they wanted to, but they chose not to. And when it was their turn and everybody was dead, they lost, or they were at the cusp of losing. And it is 500 years in the future. She is the Queen of Wakanda, and she is the Black Panther. She is taken from the heart-shaped herb. And it is 2396. And the horde has decimated and taken everybody and everything on planet Earth. And the last stand for humanity, the humans on the planet Earth, the last stand for everyone else in Wakanda is this queen and her Dora Milaje, the few that are left. And she is hoping that with this technology of quantum jumping that they use to study history, hopefully they could find where in time the important overlapping, colliding moments would help save humanity. She's hoping this happens. And in this moment, she says, there is a child of Wakanda who finds this axe in a museum, an artifact, and forces the hand of the rightful king to open the doors and the eyes of the world to who Wakanda is and what we are, and forces Wakanda into the world's stage such that we are participants. And Tarafi says, what? No, our secrecy is blown. We are part of the what? We're no longer isolationists? She said, yes, and it must happen. If it doesn't happen, we all die. Humans die. Wakandans never exist. And then she leaves because the horde has found them. And her time in this, in the past, is up. Remember, she's from 2396. Tarafi, in that moment, has grown 20 years of wisdom. And says, Brother Kudo, we must put the axe back. He says, no, I don't believe her. She gave them a piece of history that only the future would know. And he says, it is true. and no one is supposed to know this. It is true. We must put this back. You have taught me that the mission of War Dogs is about protecting the people of today, the people of Wakanda today, and ensuring their future tomorrow for my good and the good of your people, your family, your children. We must put it back. He says, you're right. Our mission has changed. And they go to put it back in the exact same place. And the artistry of going back and forth, we're in the present, we're in the future. It is so stressful. It is so beautiful. It is amazing and heartfelt. And I am reminded by the hinge point of Spider-Verse again. I believe that's a Ryan Coogler thing. I can't remember. Where every moment in time creates multiple opportunities to make the wrong choices or the right choices. And one tiny choice makes the rest of history hold upon this very fragile decision. And in this case, this acts that really didn't mean anything other than retrieval was so important because without it, Wakanda does not join the world and does not save it and stands alone at the end of history where human beings die if this small moment in time is not preserved and corrected. For me, made all the difference in the world. And as the queen shows up in the future, she's asked by the Dora Milaje, the few that survived, did it work? She goes, no, I don't have it. The artifact rests in the hands of our ancestors. I must go back. She says, there's no time. And the horde breaks in. The big giant insect creature breaks in. How did they find us? I don't know. It must have been the surge of energy. She says, well, what about our mission? She says, our ancestors' hands holds the fate of our future. If they have faith in us and our future, we must have faith in their abilities. And I thought, holy cow, how powerful is that? How absolutely powerful is that? Because without my ancestors doing what they did, without them breaking the chains of bondage, without them standing up for our rights, without all of what they did, I would literally not exist. Literally would not be here. Our future would not be as bright as it was, as it should be. And if we had the ability to sit down and commune with our ancestors and talk, I would feel so humiliated and ashamed if they did not have faith for us to take where they brought us and go forward even further with all their sacrifices, with all they did. If they did not have faith that we would continue it forward, I would be so broken and so distraught. And in this moment, as she's protecting the portal, she stands firmly, I have faith in our ancestors. And I hope they have faith in our future and what we will do. And I thought, man, talk about social commentary, like for real. Like if I could sit down and talk to my ancestors of 500 years ago, would they have faith in me to do the right thing? I know 100 times over, I'd be like, yeah, my ancestors did the right thing because here I exist. I exist with all the bounty that it may not be a lot, but man, was it more that they had? And I'm acknowledged and I'm grateful because it's what they left me. Will I acknowledge and be grateful and move it forward and preserve it? Because that's what we're talking about, artifacts and the preservation of the future by respecting the past and holding it sacred and holding strong. And standing your ground and not letting the past be destroyed by these insects. Man, it was just, there were so many themes. And so I was thinking so deeply. I was like, oh my God, those insects are going to go through the past and rewrite it And that's why all the things that we're learning about are rewritten because they just tried that. It's just crazy. I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to hear what Nikita has to say. Nikita, last episode, The Last Panther.
Right. So can you all hear me? Yes. It's got to be short. So I think there, you did a great synopsis, but I wanted to say that other things were happening. I guess we talked about these hinge points, and I just want to bring in the same, what was happening in Adwa at that same time in 1896. In American history, there was a major political realignment, and we saw an election with William McKinley, Republican, and shift in party dominance, ushering in a period of Republican control in Washington. Now, remember, this is in 1896, so it's not the same as the people of now, by the way. They would probably be the Democrats of now. So you had political realignment, economic issues about the election. This was happening in America while this was happening in Iowa. So again, hinge points. And this was also called the beginning of the progressive era. It was a period of social and political reform. While the election wasn't so solely focused on reform, it reflected the growing sentiment for change and the desire to address issues like economic inequality and corruption. In 1896, now in America, you know, that didn't include us. I just want to be clear. Okay. Not in that time. It was starting, but we know what was happening. We know what was happening. So McKinley's campaign moved for innovative strategies, including utilizing front porch talks and campaign funding. I think this is when money started getting in. So here you see each time the people of Wakanda get involved in order to retrieve their artifacts, something is happening all over the world. I just happened to bring that up because although the Battle of Adwa is absolutely important for that time frame, because this is a prequel to the future of Wakanda. And it is important to save that history and to save them. That's why she, now in time travel, let me just be very clear. You are not supposed to make any changes or interrupt what happens in history. Because she literally did that, by the way. I'm just saying. When she came back and said, if you don't put that axe back, okay, we're all going to die. So now we know that the future that we see is because she interrupted the time continuum. Okay. But hey, I'm just going to let it go because we wouldn't have Wakanda if they didn't. But still, you know, there's rules. There's rules here. Okay. I'm just going to say that. All right. I mean, just because she's the boss lady, she keeps just coming over here changing everything. So that's what I was thinking about when I was watching that. I'm like, breaking the rules. But it was really excellent. And I just thought it was just brilliant. Again, Mr. Cooper and his team, they did a brilliant job from beginning to end. 4 episodes, not enough. And I tell you, for me, I hope there's a season 2. I hope that they do it the right way. What we're going to do, and I want to say, I'm going to break some rules, I guess. But I want to say that this storytelling, this way of reimagining things, I want to see that more. I start thinking that people got tired. They got tired of telling original stories. They got tired of something fresh and something new. And it looks to me like maybe we're entering a new time where, you know, you're making movies that tell stories that mesh history and culture and community. And I think a lot of people think that it's just about Black community. But without Black community, you don't have the world. Just like if you don't have Asian community, just like if you don't have Irish community or Italian community, we are here. We exist and we are being shown in spaces and time that maybe they weren't telling our stories. And here he's telling our stories. And I just think it's just brilliant. I want to see more of that. I like a lot of movies. I watch a lot of movies. You know, I never watch a movie and go, I don't want to watch that movie because those people are in it. For me, that is very close-minded and it keeps you small. And I want to be big and see big and dream big. And so that's absolutely important. You know, that's absolutely important. And I think this level of storytelling, I want to see more of it. And Disney Plus, I mean, and let's be clear, we do not work for Disney. We do not work for anyone. We do this because we enjoy this. And we truly, truly love it. We love what we do. So I'm going to open up the floor. Jennifer, thank you, Jewel. Thank you for telling the story on the eyes of Wakanda. And you know, really, it's just amazing. I'm really, really amazed. And I'm very happy. And I'm proud that this kind of art exists. So, Jennifer, you have the mic.
Good afternoon, ladies. So glad to be here with you guys to just talk about this blurred stuff, to talk about Eyes of Wakanda. Thank you. So thank you for inviting me to participate and always being so authentic with your takes on these topics that we talk about. So thank you. So Eyes of Wakanda. It's been a long time since I've watched animation from Marvel Cinematic Universe, I mean, not animation in general. So this gave me an opportunity to watch it, and it was really, really enjoyable. I liked it. Y'all probably know what my favorite episode was at the end, the one at the end. But this was a really good series, and I'm glad that Ryan Coogler did do this, because it gave me an opportunity to see what the prequel was to the first Black Panther movie that he did. So I thought that was wonderful. That was great. And I think everybody did a great job with the series. I guess the first thing that I noticed when I first, this is from my first watching of the series, in the episode one, the lion into the lion's den. Woo-hoo! We know where we're going with this episode. The lion, this guy, is certifiably insane. That's what I wrote down. I mean, he was literally forcing his captives to join his quote unquote kingdom. And on top of that, while he was, oh gosh, it was just so much I didn't like about this character. Anyway, when he was talking to Noni, when she finally catches up with him towards the end of the episode, he talks about, I was once like you, talking to Noni, and a dog begging for scraps of validation. I was like, this dude is talking about begging. He is literally making people beg to stay alive when they reject him or his way of life, his philosophy. I'm like, this guy is insane. Just certifiably insane. Anyway, that was my first impression. And I was offended that this guy was called the lion. I was like, he need to get rid of that title. And I'll explain why in a second. Then the other thing I learned while watching this episode, I learned about the Hatut Zarazi, which is what the war dogs in the Black Panther timeline, by the time we get to the Black Panther movie, they're called the war dogs. But back then, they were called the Hatut Zarazi. At least that's my understanding is. And they're the Wakandan spies across the world. So I thought that was neat that I learned a little bit more about their the evolution of that agency in the Wakandan history. And when Noni, and I'm just randomly going through my notes here, not randomly, but sort of going through my notes here, Noni tells the lion after he does his little spiel, his monologue. Why do these villains like the monologue? I don't know. But he, after he finished his little monologue with her, he says, do you understand? And she's like, your delusion? Yes. Yeah. And I was like, yes, I agree. He's deluded. This guy's definitely deluded. And this whole idea that he's trying to put forth and what he's doing is crazy. And I didn't like the guy. Anyway, what was very poignant to me was when, towards the beginning of the episode, this is when I did the second rewatching, there's a guy who's trying to defend Crete from the lion when they're trying to invade. And he says specifically, pirate dogs, your lion will find no bounty here, only blood and sand. And that immediately took me back to something that T'Challa said in the Infinity War movie. And T'Challa says to Proxima Midnight, you are in Wakanda now. Thanos will have nothing but dust and blood. So I was like, okay, so what is this about? Why do they keep saying this kind of stuff? And what I found is that it's basically a reference to mortality. We all gotta die. We are not immortal beings. People gotta die. So, like, yeah, that's kind of bleak right there. Like, why are we talking about that? In this episode, I was like, okay, I'll see where that goes. But, what I also noticed was this thing about the second time I watched this thing about the secrecy, the whole secrecy. And I was like, yeah, they're spies. That's the whole point is the secrecy. And I was like, but also that is basically a way for Wakanda to protect the wide world from their own selves, which seems noble to me. But as you see, as the series goes on, you see that nobility is sort of questioned, I think. Let's see, in the second episode, I started noticing the artistic things that was done with this series. Specifically the intro art, the art at the beginning, was really cool. I liked it. It kind of gave me like feelings of, what a lithograph is what street paintings are or chalk drawings. It just gave me like artistic feel, a nice artistic feel. And I liked it. I really did like it. And I also noticed the theme songs. I started paying attention to the music, and I thought, oh gosh, this is really great. And I was like, this is a real orchestra. It made me look it up playing in the theme songs. Shout out to Hesham Nazi. I think I should have looked up how to pronounce it. Hesham Nazi is the, is the man who created the score and everything for this series. And I just want to read a little quote that I found that when he was talking about how he created it, he says, it was a journey of many firsts. My first time writing music for animation and my first time exploring African, Greek and Asian musical traditions. Almost everything was new to me, and that's where the magic truly lived. Eyes of Wakanda gave me the chance to explore musical landscapes I never imagined I'd step into. I'm beyond excited for fans to finally hear this music. Every note carries the wonder, challenge, and joy of discovery. And I just thought that was great. This is a guy who's an Emmy-nominated composer, who's done other Marvel series. Eyes of Wakanda is just another one added to his list. So I thought that was pretty neat, and I really did enjoy that orchestra music. Kind of reminded me of the orchestra music from the second Thor movie, because I really love that one too. The other thing I noticed is the theme. At this point, by episode 2, I knew it was a theme. Achilles complaining to Menmon, all this death and mud. I was like, here we go, talking about mortality versus immortality. Another reference to it. Does he wish for eternity? I don't know. Should we live forever? I don't know about that, but that's where my thoughts went when I heard that in the second episode, of reference to dirt and death. Let's see. I did notice also that the coins on your eyes for your ferryman, that was another reference to Jeff. It put me in the mind of a scene from A Christmas Story where Scrooge is actually taking the coins off his friend's eyes because that's how cheap he is. Yeah, I was like, yeah, that's kind of bleak too. But I guess that's a way to put some heaviness to the subject into this whole series. Like, this is very important stuff. You need to pay attention. That's the kind of idea I started getting by the time I got to this second episode. I also noticed that Memnon, while he and Achilles are having this final fight over the thing that he calls a trinket, an actual Wakandan relic, like something that's very powerful and important to Wakandans, he's calling it a trinket. But anyway, he says to him, Memnon says, even if you could understand it, it is better that you do not know. And then Achilles says, I understand whatever this power is, it will belong to Greece. And my thought after he said that is, okay, you gotta die now, dude. I don't know why you said this, but yeah, you gotta die now because you was not fixing to get his degrees. This belongs to Wakanda. You finna die now. No. And I was like, yeah, you finna die now. That's what I thought when he said that to him, because I was like, you is not finna take this. Oh my gosh. It was just like it gave me a whole, you know, feeling of how, you know, the Caucasian persuasion loves trying to take stuff that don't belong to them. Okay, just no, we're not doing that. So, and it also made me think about when Memnon was explaining, it's better that you don't know. It started making me think about the mythology, and specifically Christian mythology, because that's what I'm always going to from my upbringing. The you don't need to know reference sounds a lot like that whole story from the Bible about the tree of knowledge of good and evil. How Adam and Eve weren't told the why. They were told don't eat from it, but they weren't told the why. And we know how that ended. and then the same way when Memnon tells him, you don't understand, it's better that you do not know. It doesn't end well either. It ends in death also. So here we go. Another reference to life and death. And I guess I started thinking, okay, so the point here is that we need to be, that life is precious, and the lives that we live are precarious. We should honor that. We should respect that. And we should try to enjoy the time that we have. So that was all the themes and the thoughts that were going through my mind when I was watching that. In episode 3, at first I really didn't write no notes because it was kind of annoying to watch that episode. It was kind of just, it seemed sort of trivial on the first watch. I was like, what is going on here? I was really confused. I was like, what is this? Who is the Iron Fist? Why is this important? Do we need to? I don't know. I was a little bit confused the first watch. So the second watch, I took it a little more seriously and I was like, okay, so we have Jorani. The Guardian of the Mountains defeats the dragon Shola. Drew the power from his molten heart. Okay, so what is this? Okay, it's a character from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Hello. And when I looked it up, I had to look it up. You know, I'm not a comic book Marvel fan. I'm a Marvel Cinematic Universe fan. So I was like, oh. This is important. And it made me think about, okay, I really do need to check out those Netflix series that Marvel put. Marvel put on the Netflix series, because maybe I would have already known about this. But anyway, I thought it was interesting how
Lord. This is annoying. Basha and Jirani, they deserve each other. That's the conclusion I came to. Y'all deserve each other. That's yes, y'all deserve each other because she says, I'm the fool who seduces Thief. And he was like, no, I seduce you. And I was like, why are y'all trying to seduce each other? What? Why are y'all trying to seduce each other? And maybe that was because my first impression was it's a sexual thing they were talking about. But when you look up the definition of seduction, there's another definition that talks about convincing someone to go another way. Like, to convince them to go to choose another course of action, and usually this course of action leads to their leads to them doing something foolhardy, something really foolish. So I was like, okay, that's apropos, but y'all deserve each other. I'm fine with that. Y'all trying to trick each other. I couldn't understand why they was doing that, but whatever. So the other part about that episode, it was a lot after I watched it. These two people, Basha and Jirani, Lord, they were aggravating me. I'm just saying. Some of the scenes were cool though. The scene where the mirror is on the ground and you get to see them fight through the mirror, the reflection of the mirror. I just really thought in the end, Jirani is complaining about him stealing something from her culture when her culture was the one that stole something from Wakanda. And I'm just like, okay, whatever. In the end, everybody kind of said, okay, we're going our separate ways. Everybody got what they wanted. I thought that was cool, but it was kind of funny the second time I watched it. So yeah, that was something else. Should I continue and talk about the fourth episode or not?
Thank you so much. And thank you for the question. I was worried because you said seduce and I was like, oh no, we're a family show, Jennifer, where are we going with this? It's like, oh, she came up with a second definition. Thank you so much. I think if you can recap in like a two minute conversation, because unfortunately I went over and I had a lot to say, and we need to bring all of this content and really chat it up in the after pod. So I want to hear all of everything you have to say, but we're going to have to move it over to the after pod. And I want you to finish up the fourth episode because we're right at the third one right now. And like I said, ooh, I was nervous about the definition of seduce, girl, because I wasn't sure where we were going. So if we can have maybe two or three comments, less than 2 minutes on the fourth episode and move everything into the after pod. I've got to work on my time. I'm really sorry, but I'm so excited to hear what you have to say, Jennifer.
Oh, that's okay. I enjoyed listening. You know, I enjoy listening to you all because you're always bringing something else. Like you say to each other, you always bring something else to the table. And I thought it was very interesting. All of the history and the commentary that you ladies have is always interesting to me. Love it. But anyway, I'm going to try to. Oh gosh, this was the best episode so far. The Last Panther. I love time travel stuff. This is my favorite. Yay, time travel. Yay. Prince Tafari was interesting. Kuda was even more interesting, but Kuda said something that was interesting to me the first time I watched it, and he said something about chasing foolish glory, and it made me think, okay, so there's a connect there about being foolhardy from the last episode and stuff. So it started making me think that this whole series is another specialty, Ryan Coogler specialty, coming of age. And this time it's not just one character that's coming of age. It's really kind of the whole Wakandan, I don't want to say spirituality. I want to say the whole Wakandan way of being, the way that they conduct their culture, their way of life changes over time. So there's a coming of age in that sense to me that I start realizing while I'm watching this episode. And I know when the prince started talking about being the third son, feeling like he has no destiny, I started feeling sorry for him. I was like, why? You're the son of a prince. You got to be. What's, and it just made me think about in real life, the second son of Prince Diana and how he felt. So I was like, okay, yeah. So that's the kind of feel I got from that. And, which was cool. It was cool. The quantum scanner tech was cool. Yay. they were originally in the, you know, in the future. They're using this technology to study history. I thought that was wonderful. The last Panther, that's all we know. That's all I could gather from her name by that time. She revisits, I thought it was so cool how they did it. She was revisiting the past, the previous war dog's recovery of artifacts and Wakandan property. She was visiting all the previous ones from the previous episodes. I thought that was so cool. And because she's trying to prevent a doomed future for Wakanda. Okay, makes sense. I like the Stargate style portal. Yay, time travel. I also noticed a little something I didn't like. I think Kuda was accusing her of being a witch. What? Because he says, I don't know how she put those images in our minds. What kind of trickery she used. I'm like, trickery? Why are people trying to trick people? Why is that a theme in this series? I don't know. Stop trying to trick each other. What are we doing? Why are we accusing people of stuff? Anyway, and I just thought this is the typical male behavior. When they face with a woman who's more powerful than them or something they don't understand, they assume some kind of trickery, something underhanded, deceitful, and that really wasn't what it was. And that's about as far as I got. With that episode, but yay, my favorite episode, time travel, yay. And that's about it.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you. I think we're gonna have a lot to talk about after the pod. I want to thank you, Jewel. I want to thank you, Jennifer. I want to thank you, Jewel, for always being a great host with me here on Blurred Words. We will be on every place you can get podcasts. We hope you enjoy Eyes of Wakanda. Check out Blurred Words, our website. And this is Chatmosa that we use to do our podcast. And for those of you that don't know, you can always come and check us out. You don't have to speak. You can sit in the room and you can listen. And that is an added advantage. Not only do you hear the podcast live, but you can also participate. It's interactive. So that would be pretty dope. Don't be shy. We're introverts too, so you're not going to be required to talk. Just so you know, that's just to let you know for future reference. If you enjoy this episode, please let us know. And I want to thank the people that have been downloading and listening. We know we're doing something right, and we thank you for that. And Jennifer, thank you for always showing up to bring the heat. And you bring a different perspective, something that a lot of things to think about. And I am always happy that you love Blurred Stuff as much as we do. And that you contribute in the way that you do. I think next week is going to be interesting for those of you that follow myself and Jewel. We're going to be doing Wednesday next week. Hope you watched it. The first part one has just come on Netflix. It's 4 episodes and it's really good. I was impressed. Now, let's give our ranking. I'm going to give Eyes of Wakanda for all the reasons that I said, for every reason that I said. It answers my who, what, why, and how. And also, the animation was the best I have seen in my lifetime. I mean, since the creation of, I haven't been around since creation of animation because I'm not that old. But I've been watching TV for a long, long time. I've been watching movies for a long time, and I've been reading books for a long time. So I think that this is 3 shades. Jewel?
Definitely, for all the reasons you mentioned, all the things that you brought to my perspective, all the things that I thought of, all the things that they made me think of, the enjoyment. I laughed, I cried. It moved me, Bob. 3 jewels, 3 diamonds, all the way, 100%. Great work. Fantastic.
That's 100% from both of us. 3 for me, 3 for her. 100% in our ranking. I saw what Rotten Tomatoes gave them. I saw what all the critics out there gave them. And I think anyone that discounts this animated series is not watching it through the lens of nuance about the community of Wakanda and how the prequel works, and is not watching it through the lens of storytelling in a new way. It's not new to mix new with old, but it is new to mix mythology with the MCU in this way. I mean, we do have, you know, we talk about Thor, we talk about the X-Men, we talk about and all these in DC and MCU. But what Ryan Coogler and his team has done is nothing short of amazing of how they interwove history. This is history. And it can show you what you do to protect your history, your culture, and keep it safe. And then in the end, sometimes we have to be able to have to resolve it by not getting that artifact so that we can move into the future, into technology, and have an ally in some way, shape, or form. And this is actually how that worked out. So I think it's really beautiful, and I can't wait till the next Wakanda. Also, Jennifer, what's your rating?
The same. Three shades, three diamonds.
Ooh, rah. And I think it's excellent. Thank you so much. And thank you for those of you that will listen to this. Thank you for those of you that are listening to this. And also, I want to say that in episode 2, where they talked about they went in and discussed the Odyssey, the movie itself is coming out in 2026. And the original Odyssey came out in 1997. They always touted as the greatest movie ever made. Well, I saw that one. And I also saw the Iliad or Troy with Brad Pitt. That was not very good, by the way. That was not very good. I watched on the Turner Classic Movie Channels where Kirk Douglas played Ulysses. I thought that was excellent, but that was in 1954, and I like classic movies. So I watched that in black and white. I hope they do it justice. The previews look excellent. So mark your calendars, make a book note of it, and you can find out the history of the Odyssey, which is one of the greatest stories ever told. And if you happen to like to read books, please check it out. The Odyssey by Homer. It's one of my favorite books. So I want you all to have a great day. I want you all to enjoy your listening, enjoy your day, and stay fresh. Jewel?
Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.